You are listening to the Good Day Wellness Podcast, a podcast dedicated to boosting your mood. I am your host, Melissa Fedeli, and I'm here to support you on the way to calming your mind and nourishing all aspects of your life. Together, we can bridge the connection between body and mind and make every day a good day. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Today, I'm excited to dive into a topic that I know so many of you have questions about. Now, to join me on this episode, I have the lovely Stephanie from Eclipse Naturopathy. She is an experienced naturopath and herbalist who takes a loving approach to wellness. Today, Steph and I are talking all about iron deficiency and actually getting to the bottom of it. So many of us are told that we are deficient in iron, but it's rarely looked into why. So today with Steph's help, we are going to give you an insightful episode into iron deficiency, the root causes, treatments, and how you can properly address that low iron. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. I'm very excited to talk about iron deficiency, as you know. So I think it'll be great.
Oh, I'm excited to dive into this one because I've had my history with iron deficiency as well. And so I understand that process of, you know, you go to the doctors, you get diagnosed with low iron, they put you on supplements or give you an infusion, but it kind of ends there. So I'm excited to get to the bottom of it because so many women have questions, but why am I iron deficient? So that's what we're here to really break down today. But before we get
into that,
before we get into that, I need to know, what is one thing you do every day to boost your mood?
This is such a good question. I love this because obviously I have a background of yoga and meditation. So meditation is kind of the one thing I've found every single day that just helps me regulate my nervous system. And it's interesting because as we get more into like talking about the gut and how that influences iron, I think sometimes we underestimate how much our nervous system affects our gut as well. So yeah, I feel like it's really important to just have something that you do every day to, you know, just calm ourselves down from all the stress. So yeah, that's definitely mine.
Amazing. And I like how you said having something to do every day. And I do think it's important to find that routine. Find what it is that you love to do and make it a part of your daily routine, a daily habit, because I feel like that's when you actually stick to things and you commit to doing it, and that's when you see the results and the benefits.
Absolutely. And I think also seeing it as a lifestyle change, because I find this with a lot of my patients, and I will admit I've also been guilty of this in the past, when you do something because you're not feeling that well and you start feeling really good, and then all of a sudden you're like, I don't need that anymore, and you stop doing the thing that made you feel good, and then all of a sudden you're kind of back in that same cycle. So I think for me, even this year, committing to daily meditation, even if it's just 5 minutes, it's been huge.
Oh, I am guilty of that too.
We all are.
All right, let's get into the good stuff. So iron deficiency seems to be a very common diagnosis among so many women. What does iron deficiency actually mean, and how does it impact our body and our mind?
Yeah, so this is a good question because I do get this a lot in terms of like, what actually is iron deficiency? And there is, I guess, two different types, because you can have iron deficiency on its own, which is typically like low ferritin, or you can have iron deficiency anemia. So I'll explain the difference between the two, but iron is obviously an essential element. So we need it for our body to perform like lots of essential functions. And so the technical description is when your body doesn't have enough iron to produce hemoglobin. So that's just like a part of a red blood cell that kind of carries oxygen to the tissues. So when you have iron deficiency anemia, your body just can't produce, I guess, enough, or can't get enough oxygen to the tissue, so your hemoglobin starts to drop really low. So that's kind of more serious in terms of like anemia. But then you can have iron deficiency, which is just when you have typically low ferritin, and some of the other markers in your iron test will sort of reflect whether you have true iron deficiency, which I'll talk about more later, because I think oftentimes women are overdiagnosed as well, or I guess not really looking into the cause. But looking at the impact, it it crosses over so many different systems and so many barriers, I guess. It's not just one part of it. Like a lot of people will associate low iron with, you know, feeling like tired or some, you know, I have some clients say, oh, I know when it's time for my yearly iron infusion because I start feeling tired, right? And it's, I mean, having to get an iron infusion every year is sort of a red flag within itself, but other symptoms, so definitely fatigue, but also hair loss is a really common one. Dizziness, easy bruising, having pale skin. You can get an increase in heart rate, heart palpitations, shortness of breath. And then if we sort of look at like the mental functions, because iron is also really important for brain function. So when we do have a deficiency, it can worsen or increase anxiety, depression, it can cause brain fog, it can cause poor concentration. Like it's so important. And it's one of the most common deficiencies, but especially in women.
Yeah, wow. So many different, it's kind of like, I mean, that's the thing with the body, right? Everything is attached to something else. So everything is going to have a reaction, whether it's mental or physical, everything's intertwined. Mm-hmm. So I think looking at iron, a lot of, like you said, a lot of us just look at iron as something that makes us feel tired if we don't have enough of it. But really, as you said, it's actually so much deeper than that. And there are so many levels to it, which is why it's important to talk about iron deficiency and the different types, because, you know, if we just look at it as something that makes us tired, we're never really going to learn to, you know, be more inquisitive about it and look more into it and wonder, okay, why is my hair thinning? Why am I feeling this way? So, yeah, I think it's great that you've kind of touched on both of them as well.
Yeah, and I think also similar to what you said at the start is because I've also had my own journey. Like I was on and off iron supplements for probably, I would say, close to 10 years, especially being vegetarian back in the day. So I learn a lot through my own issues, and I think this is why I'm so passionate about it, because not only have I gone through it myself, I now see so many women who have it, and I think there's just so many unanswered questions and so many things like in terms of symptoms that we sort of miss as well, because when we think it's just this one symptom that's related, we kind of miss, because not everyone gets fatigue. I've seen women who have really, really low iron, but they're actually functioning pretty well in terms of like energy levels. So then we're looking at, okay, what else is there underneath all of that?
So interesting. So when we are diagnosed with low iron, the first thing we're told to do is go on iron supplements or have an infusion, but it's rarely talked about those underlying causes, you know, what's really causing that deficiency. So I guess what I'm asking is what actually causes iron deficiency? You know, what are the reasons? What can happen? And, you know, what can it stem from?
Yeah. So this is such a big question, because there's what I call like situational causes, and then there's kind of like the more root kind of causes. So, you know, iron supplementation and infusions, they are a band-aid fix, right? And so we want to look at like why they've become depleted. And situational causes are more like acute causes that we can kind of pinpoint of why someone's lost their iron stores. So that would be like having heavy blood loss through pregnancy or through having a really heavy menstrual cycle, or vegetarian diet. So that they're the kind of most common ones that if someone has one or has experienced a couple of those situations, we can sort of see this is why they've got iron deficiency. And that's okay, because in the short term, we can sort of just give them an iron supplement. And usually once you replenish, then their body can naturally maintain that on their own. I think for women, especially the heavy menstrual bleeding, which a lot of women don't realize is actually not normal, is kind of one of the things that I think does a disservice to women by doctors always using that as an excuse that, oh, you've got a period, of course you're going to have low iron. But then again, it's often not further investigated, because they just assume that that's the reason for iron deficiency. And then even if it is, like I said, having a heavy period is actually not normal. So that also needs to be investigated, because you just cannot be losing such a big amount of blood every month and then your body can't replenish. And, you know, you shouldn't be having large blood clots either. That's another really common cause if you're having clots during your period. I guess with being a vegetarian, we've got heme iron, which is found in animal products, and that is the most bioavailable form of dietary iron. So even though if you're a vegetarian, you could be eating, you know, plant foods that have quite a bit of iron, it always is just less absorbable in the body. So that's just going to naturally happen. So then we've got kind of what I would say are like the other factors that we need to start looking into if short-term iron supplementation doesn't work on someone and it's not replenishing their stores like we think it should. So those are usually like gut related issues. So I always say like iron is not always a low iron issue. It's a gut issue because your gut is where your nutrients are all absorbed from. So very commonly and very misdiagnosed, we have celiac disease, which I'll kind of touch on in a little bit more detail like after, but that's, you know, like an autoimmune condition that stops you from absorbing nutrients. We've got like inflammatory bowel disease, so like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, parasite infection. So this is a really funny one that people always get a bit, I guess, freaked out about. But where, so iron is the fuel source for parasites and bacterial overgrowth. So a lot of the times those like stealth pathogens, they're actually sequestering iron. So they suck the iron stores out. And then once you give them an iron supplement, they're like, this is great. We've just got like a never-ending supply of iron. They continue to overgrow. They cause lots of inflammation. That causes leaky gut, which is another common cause of low iron, or I say low iron, but this can be for any nutrients, but I think also low iron is one of the most commonly tested. So, you know, things like zinc and your B vitamins, they're not as commonly tested. So it's just a general low iron kind of picture, but nutrient deficiencies at the end of the day. So then we've kind of got, so still on that issue, we've got like, is it a true iron deficiency or is it just low ferritin? Because we need to be looking at the whole picture of pathology, because sometimes GPs will only test ferritin. So especially if you're someone who's having routine iron checks, you know, whether you've like had, you know, a bit of a traumatic pregnancy or something like that, oftentimes doctors will sort of, to save, I guess, like some time, will just do ferritin. And if that's the only marker that's low, well, it's not really just a marker of iron deficiency, because I guess I'll explain about the other markers. So, you know, just in case anyone's out there reading their own, you know, blood tests and they'd be like, what do the other things mean? It's really good to know that they are actually important, which I had never thought of. I would only just look at my ferritin and be like, oh, that's really low. And, you know, the doctors never talked about anything else. So we've got, you know, it's so commonly like, just so missed. But we've got four markers on our iron panel. So we've got iron. So that is typically reflects the last maybe 24 hours, 48 hours of dietary consumption of iron, I guess. And so that's what we call like the passengers. So that's the iron that needs to get across to different sites throughout the body and kind of have its effect. And then we've got transferrin. So those, you can think about them like the taxis, because the iron can't just float around the body by itself. It gets picked up by a taxi, and that's what's going to deliver the iron from the gut to the liver, where it's stored as ferritin, and other destinations in the body where it needs to have its effect. And then we have transferrin saturation. So that's a percentage that's telling us how full are those taxis with passengers. So, you know, how many of the taxis are occupied? And these are all really important, because when the ferritin stores are low, the liver basically increases the taxis, the transferrin, so when you actually have true iron deficiency, the transferrin will go up, because that's showing your body is actually asking for iron, because it's like, hey, let's send out for some more iron because we're getting a little bit low here. But then what can happen is when the transferrin is high, that means body's actually hungry for iron. But then when it's actually normal or low and your ferritin is low, well, that's actually showing like, is there another reason for iron deficiency, you know, like if there's enough passengers in the taxis, then it's usually like there's a reason that it's not getting across to the liver, and that can be like inflammation or low cofactors or, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Love the way you've described that. That was amazing. That was so easy to understand.
Yes, I am. I hope that makes sense. I'm very much in my iron bubble. But yeah, it's really good to know that there are other factors that you can read and that will tell us. And I think you'll know the difference when you go to a practitioner that is well-versed in iron. They will be able to tell you why you do need iron or why you don't need iron. And yeah, they'll help you kind of distinguish those things.
It's great. And I think it's a good thing you've described that and explained that, because we often get our blood results back they're really hard to read. Like, if you don't have any experience in that, then they are really hard to read. You don't really know what you're looking for. So I think, you know, you explaining that and sharing that information is just going to make it that little bit easier, so that when we do get our blood results back, we can feel empowered to say, okay, this is high, this is low, maybe I do need more iron, maybe I should go seek a second opinion. So yeah, I love that you've explained it that way. That was so good.
Oh, good. Yeah, I hope that helps someone.
Absolutely it will. So in terms of an infusion and iron supplements, why are they just a band-aid, and what should we be doing when we say, when the doctor says, hey, or your naturopath or whoever you see says you have low iron, what should we be doing, and why is supplements and a infusion just a band-aid?
Yeah, so I think going back to what I said before, I guess we need to look at correcting the reasons that cause the iron deficiency. So if it was situational, you know, if it was blood loss through pregnancy, that's already been corrected because they're no longer going through that issue. So then it's just about repleting the iron stores. And so maybe that's just a straight iron supplement or iron infusion. A lot of the times after blood loss, you'll get offered an iron infusion. But yeah, if it's not as situational, or, you know, if it's like the situation of being a vegetarian, but we've worked on improving your gut health and increasing your digestive enzymes so that you can break down nutrients, and then your iron's still not going up, that's when I would typically go for a further investigation, because this is typically what will happen a lot of the times, is someone will take an iron supplement and they'll get a really quick increase of ferritin and they start feeling really good almost straight away. But then what happens is, because I don't put people on an iron supplement long term, right? It's quite inflammatory for the body. It can put a lot of pressure on your liver. It needs to constantly be retested. So it's just kind of a short thing. And then once I sort of observe what happens once we stop taking the iron supplement, and a lot of the times their ferritin will just drop down again. And that's telling me that we never address the cause, and it's probably not situational. And we need to find out why they have low iron, because like I said, it's just not a good solution to be on iron supplements for the rest of your life. There's lots of studies that, you know, can cause oxidative stress. It can burden your liver. Your liver is already under such a heavy load. Like, I always talk about the liver being so underrated. It's doing so many things. It's processing our hormones, the chemicals that we're exposed to, you know, especially as women, to go on a little bit of a tangent here, but women with, you know, their personal care products, we're so exposed to, I think it was like 160 chemicals a day. And so we don't want to be putting any more pressure on the liver. So because there is the issue that you could have too much iron, and that is often what I've seen before, when, you know, I've had a client come in and they have, you know, they've had endometriosis, they're having really heavy periods, right? They're bleeding for 10 to 12 days every cycle, and then they're getting like a 22-day period. So it's almost like they're bleeding for like half of their lives. They didn't realize that was normal. The doctor's solution is just to go on an iron supplement. And then I look at her bloods, and her body's actually not asking for iron, and she's taking a poor form of iron as well, which also doesn't help. So then we're sort of looking at, is the heavy periods also a method for your body to detox the iron? Because we think about the period as a detox pathway as well. So sometimes when someone does have iron overload, they will get a lot of blood loss, because your body actually really tightly regulates iron. And that's why it also has hepcidin. So haven't mentioned this yet, but hepcidin is like the anti-iron hormone, and that is released from the gut when the body senses that there's been an iron dosage of more than 24 milligrams. So just for reference, the doctor recommended supplements, which are usually elemental iron. So, you know, am I allowed to say brands here? But, you know, the ferrogradsy, the Multifar, They're about 100 milligrams of iron. So once the body senses there's been more than 24 milligrams of iron, hepcidin's released, and that will actually stop iron absorption from the gut because your body's like, okay, we've actually got quite a bit here. That will then last in the system for 48 hours. So then even if, so if you take an iron supplement like and it's got a really high dosage, you eat a steak the next day, it's unlikely that you're actually getting any of that iron from the steak. So yeah, I forgot where I was there. Went on a little bit of a tangent, but yeah, so I guess we need to look at more than iron supplementation. And then we're also looking at like the forms and what kind of iron supplement we want to actually be taking as well, because that is all going to affect, you know, how we actually, how it interacts with our body really.
I guess that leads into the next question. So in terms of taking an iron supplement, are there some that are better than others? And, you know, if you are looking for an iron supplement, what should you look out for? Like what's, how do you know it's a good iron supplement?
Yeah, so typically what we want to be looking at is, I guess, like food-based sources of iron are always going to be the best. So for people who maybe are not in dire straits, like their ferritin's low, but it's not too bad and we've got time to replenish, I'll usually recommend beef liver capsules because, you know, it's got all the natural cofactors in it. It's got folate, vitamin A, B12, and that also helps with the absorption of iron. So that's just a really easy way that you can sort of slowly build up your iron stores. But then if it's someone who we're needing to increase it a little bit quicker, then I'll be looking for an iron supplement that has iron bisglycinate and in a dosage of 24 milligrams. And then you're also wanting to look for one that has some active cofactors, so like active folate, active B12. You know, otherwise if you're going for the iron supplements that I mentioned before that are typically recommended from the chemist, they're just inorganic forms of iron and it makes it very hard for the body to absorb. Again, it's putting pressure on the gut and then it can cause digestive issues. So a lot of the time people get like constipation, darkened stools, maybe even like blackening of the stools and nausea. They're like really common. So yeah, I usually say start with something a little bit more natural, even if it's beef liver powder and you put it into your food. But yeah, otherwise we're looking for, I guess, organic forms of iron.
Amazing. So let's talk about that correlation between iron deficiency and celiac disease. So you did mention it before, but I'm sure this is going to be something new to a lot of people. So can you explain that connection?
Yes, definitely. Okay, so celiac disease is an autoimmune disease where the body has a reaction to gluten and that causes the body to attack the intestinal wall lining. And so over time, that actually damages the villi. And the villi are like these little, I don't know, they're kind of like sweepers on the gut and they are responsible for absorbing the nutrients within the small intestine. So over time, that repeated inflammation and damage, it actually over time hinders the body's ability to absorb nutrients from our food. So again, that's what's going to be leading to a whole array of deficiencies, iron, of course, being the most common because that's most commonly seen. But that's why a lot of people who are first diagnosed with celiac and don't know they have celiac, they can lose a lot of weight because your body is actually going through malnutrition because it's not absorbing nutrients from the food. Yeah. And sometimes something that I hear a lot is women who say, you know, they've got ongoing iron deficiency. And I say, have you been tested for celiac? And they say, yes. But at that point, a lot of them are already eating a low gluten diet because they're already not feeling good. And they're not told that to properly test for celiac disease, you have to do 2 weeks of gluten loading, which means you have to eat like a lot of gluten. It's basically the equivalent, I think, to eating about 2 pieces of toast with each meal. So wow. What's that? Six pieces of bread a day. That's how much gluten you would have to eat for 2 weeks to actually get a proper result. And then we've got, you know, we've got the top tier, which is followed by an endoscopy. That's obviously quite invasive where you have to get put under and it's not always ideal. So if someone's sort of at the start of their gut health journey, they're not willing to do that, nor do I always recommend that, because if I can already clearly see the signs that they're getting not just gut symptoms, because celiac is also, you know, related to like joints and muscles and, you know, brain fog and all those other kind of symptoms as well. I will typically just remove gluten for a certain period of time. So we do a bit of an elimination and we see if that helps to increase iron stores while we work on the other factors. And a lot of the times, if it does, then that person just might not go back to eating gluten, because like I said, a lot of the times they're already feeling like they know that they feel better when they don't eat gluten, which is also a huge sign. And I mean, then you can have non-celiac gluten sensitivity, which is, you know, quite hard to test for, but it's similar in the fact that someone's got low iron, they're really struggling with like food sensitivities, especially gluten. They get really bloated, they get really foggy, joint pain, but then they've been tested for celiac and it's negative. And at some point, you know, pathology can tell us so much, and I'm, you know, a big fan of pathology testing, but then I also think there's the clinical experience of being able to look at the patient in front of you and say, look, even though your bloods are telling us that everything's okay, something's clearly not okay. And until we get to the bottom of that, we kind of need to mitigate the damage that's going on, because celiac left untreated, it can cause like a lot of times irreversible damage to the gut wall lining. So it is quite important to pick up the red flags, you know, even like looking for blood in your stools. That's a really good way to tell that something's not right. And I think also just for women and anyone really, if, you know, if there's men listening to this podcast, it's so important to look at your bowel motions. It can be something that is quite uncomfortable at the start, but honestly, the more you do it, the easier it is, because that will tell us so much about our health. And, you know, I do think like the rate of like cancers and other very serious conditions are going up. And I think it's really important for us to be our own advocates and to be connected to our bodies and seeing when things are changing so that we can actually reach out to someone. And a lot of the times it isn't something as serious, but I think it's always better to know, because, you know, with celiac, a lot of the times people think, oh, you just can't eat gluten. And it's just not as simple as that. You know, it's actually that a lot of people have this actual autoimmune reaction to gluten, and it's not even just eating gluten. It can be food that is contaminated with gluten, whether it's been cooked in the same facility or processed together. So it actually is really serious. And I think sometimes it can be a little bit shrugged off with, yeah, the impact. And so, yeah, iron deficiency can be definitely a red flag for celiac disease.
Interesting. I find that so interesting. It's like I said at the start, sometimes it's, you know, it's not just that one symptom that you've heard of that's most common, like fatigue. It can be so many other things. And that's why it's so important to have these conversations and speak to a professional when you're not feeling okay, and just listen into your body, because there could be something deeper that's going on that, like you said, can cause that irreversible damage, which, you know, we want to mitigate that as much as we can. So yeah, it's very, very I think of course we need to, sorry, what were you going to say?
We both spoke. I was just going to say, you know, I'm a really big fan of, I talk a lot to my clients and on Instagram about being your own advocate. And I think a lot of my job is actually helping people get the right answers from where they need, because, you know, as we know, a lot of testing and a lot of alternative treatment, it's not covered by Medicare. So we need to do our best to, I guess, spot the red flags and be able to help someone. And so I think it's really important for other people to know that there is help available. And even though you've been told everything's fine, if you still don't feel well, you know, get a second opinion, get a third opinion, find someone who will listen to you and will help you investigate. And I think it's really good to have resources like this, because I also acknowledge that alternative medicine is not always available to people, whether it's where they're living or it's a financial thing. So I think it's just so good to have more information about what to look for. So then, you know, because sometimes people don't think that there's actually something wrong, or if it's just a symptom or two, they think it might not be that serious. But then when they hear, okay, it could be other things as well, that could be their sign that, okay, well, it's time to investigate this, and they feel good and like it's the right time to kind of get themselves there.
Absolutely. And that's why I love having these conversations on here, because, you know, I was someone that was diagnosed with low iron many years ago, and I was just told it's low iron, it's fine, just have an infusion, you'll be fine. But no one really ever talked to me about, okay, but why? And it wasn't until I did my own research. But that was because I'm in the health field. You know, that's because I work in this industry. You know, if you're someone that has just been told and, you know, this isn't in the realm of what you do in terms of your work, you're probably not going to sit there for hours on end researching, looking at different research papers. So I think having these conversations and having a resource that people can listen and think, oh, wait, I'm experiencing that, or that happened to me, or that's actually how she's explaining this, that's how I felt. So yeah, that's why I love having these conversations and getting people like you on who are so well-versed in these topics and in these areas is just so beneficial. So I think before we move on to wrapping everything up, I do want to know what that connection between iron and mental health is. I know we touched on it at the start a little bit, but I really just want to go a little bit deeper into that because I think, you know, our mental health can really be implicated by so many different factors, lifestyle, but also what's going on within our body. And I think, you know, iron is not something we commonly talk about in terms of our mental health. So I'd love for you to just bring light to that and share, you know, what are the connections there and how can we help that?
Yeah, I think the most simple description for that is that low iron impacts a woman's quality of life. And this is not to say that it doesn't impact a man's quality of life, right? We're all about equality, but you know, we know that as women, we have our body carries so much more load. We have hormonal fluctuations. We naturally, you know, have more going on that makes us feel fatigued. So then when you add low iron on top of that, and then you add on this world where we are expected to keep up with men constantly, no matter what time of our cycle we're in, no matter what we're going on, you know, we're working, we've got kids, we're busy, we've got our cycle to deal with. And so adding low iron on top of that, it's just that general feeling of not being able to pick ourselves up, right? Always being fatigued, feeling quite anxious, you know, even after birth. I think this is a really important topic as well, that postpartum depression and anxiety is often so many times missed because it's just diagnosed with, oh yeah, you've got low iron, or you're just a first time mom, or, you know, all of these things. And it can be so easy to miss because I see a lot where we correct all those other factors and they're still feeling anxious or they've still got depression. And so, yeah, I think for women, it is also, it can be harder to get our health issues taken seriously or to be heard. And I think it really does a disservice to women in terms of the way that we're already dealing with so much impact of the way that our bodies function. So if we can lighten the load a little bit by making sure that, you know, iron is covered, and again, not just by an iron supplement, but actually getting to the root cause of what's happening under there, it makes a huge difference, honestly. Like when I finally got to the bottom of my iron issues and I didn't have to take a supplement anymore, I was like, this is what it feels like to just be able to function at a normal level of energy and not have to nap throughout the day and, you know, not always feel like I can't think of the right words. So it makes a huge impact.
Huge. So if we were to give our listeners something practical to take from this episode, what are your tips and suggestions on dietary changes or supplements that they can make immediately, like right now, to start addressing that iron deficiency? What would you say to someone?
So I would probably first work on improving digestive enzymes. So making sure that your body is in a good state to digest and break down the nutrients. So that includes sitting down and taking time to eat your meal properly. So, you know, in a relaxed state, trying not to have your phone in front of you, taking a couple of deep breaths before you eat, because that's going to put us into rest and digest, chewing your food really mindfully. And something you can even do before you eat is increasing dietary intake of bitters. So anything that's bitter in taste is going to help to increase the stomach acid, digestive enzymes. So you can have some apple cider vinegar in some warm water with lemon before your meals. You can eat some ginger or make a ginger tea, or just having a salad of leafy greens with, you know, kale and rocket during or before your meal. And this is especially if you're going to be eating an iron-rich meal like red meat, and especially if you feel like you're someone who doesn't ever properly break down red meat. That's a really common complaint I hear with women, is feeling like it's not digested. Yeah. Something else, well, a couple of things is again, if you need iron, go for beef liver capsules. And when you're taking an iron supplementation, so this is purely for iron, not beef liver, you want to take the supplements every second day, because again, we're going back to that hepcidin, which is the anti-iron hormone. And if you take it every second day, that's going to give you a much better chance of actually absorbing the iron from that supplement. So depending on whether someone is really low in ferritin or they're okay, I would either do one or two tablets every second day. And most importantly is to find a practitioner, ideally someone a little bit more holistic who's very well versed in treating iron deficiency and reading an iron panel properly, and who's just going to help you find the answers you need.
Yeah, someone like you.
Yeah, maybe.
Absolutely. So where can everyone find you? If they want to come and see you for a consult, if they want to check you out on socials, where can they find you?
So on Instagram, I am under Eclipse Naturopathy. You can also find me at Eclipse Yoga. That's my yoga studio that I will soon be practicing from as well. I do in-person consults in Adelaide, and I also do online in Australia and New Zealand. So lots of options in terms of if you can't actually get to someone, but you're looking for a specific practitioner, then just jump online. It's eclipsewellness.com.au and I'll find you there.
Yeah, I will pop all your handles in the show notes and tag you and everything on social so everyone can come and find you. But thank you so much for just coming on and shedding so much light on such an important topic that I often feel is very much overlooked. I think everything you've shared today really is going to help a lot of women who listen to this podcast, including myself. I'm taking on your tips as well. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I hope it reaches the right people and people can get the answers they need.
Absolutely, it will. Okay. So if you loved this episode, please go ahead and leave us a review, share it on your stories and show us some love. It means so much to me. Thank you all for today. I will see you back here for another mood boosting episode. Thank you so much and sending so much love to you all. And don't forget, you have the power to boost your mood. It's all in your daily routines. So go make today a good day. Bye.